Hello, everyone. You're listening to Dragon Talk Podcast with your host, as always, Tim Ronka. Well, hope everyone out there had an awesome Thanksgiving weekend, those of you that celebrated, of course. And hope it was a little bit better than mine. Mine was a little bit weird because I had this weird stomach virus. And I got kind of sick. And so what did I do? I was laying around all day, so I decided to turn on TNA Impact, and I got even sicker watching that. So I hope none of you had to sit through that terrible show. But anyhow, enough of that. I got a really special show for you guys here today. I got a good friend of mine on. He's probably one of the most knowledgeable people I've ever met in terms of wrestling and other things too, of course. But he's really one of the most best minds I've known about wrestling right now, and that is James Argento. James, how you doing today?
Doing great, sir. Thank you so much for having me on the show today. Are you feeling better now?
Oh yeah, I'm feeling much better. I just, you know, it was bad to combine a stomach virus with TNA. It just didn't work.
You must not have watched TNA tonight, huh?
I actually did watch it tonight.
I didn't get to see the Voodoo Kin Mafia stuff. Was that good?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, it's good for what it is. I don't think it's good on its own, but I mean, it was kind of funny. Like, they were sleeping outside WWE headquarters. They were talking about Big Dick Johnson.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. But tell all the listeners out there a little bit about yourself, like what you know about wrestling and all that and whatever.
Well, I am a third-year graduate student, a law student here at FSU, and I know Tim through the contraption known as Facebook. We all met up with all these fans at FSU wanting to watch WrestleMania. That was a couple of years ago for WrestleMania 21, was it?
Yeah, it was 21, yep.
And since then, we've all been good friends, a crew of us. Actually, you and me mostly. And Liz Jackson is another good friend of ours who's a big wrestling fan. She's actually training to be a wrestler, so you may see her on TV as a WWE diva if they don't go with bikini models, as they're saying they're going with now. So
she's pretty tight with Marty Jannetty, right?
What did you say?
She's pretty close at Marty Jannetty, isn't she?
She is very close to Marty Jannetty. Marty Jannetty trained her, actually.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so.
Yeah, and Marty Jannetty used to do wrestling up here in Tallahassee. I don't know if you're around back then. Actually, Tim, I think you were around when I started at FSU, so we were both at the same time. And Marty Jannetty used to run wrestling shows out of Chubby's, which is the nightclub here in Tallahassee.
He ran shows out of there?
No, they don't do it anymore.
Oh, wow. I mean, but he used to, though. Wow. Yeah. I wouldn't think of Chubby's as like a wrestling hall. That's pretty cool, though.
Oh, yeah. But I've been a fan for years. I've been a fan since I was a kid. I remember my brother and dad forcing me down to watch wrestling back in the 80s, and I absolutely hated it. I hated it. I cried when I watched it. I remember my first memory of wrestling was when Sting was handcuffed to the guardrail by the Four Horsemen, and they were beating him with a cast, and it was just so scary. But, you know, I loved Hulk Hogan as a little kid. However, I grew out of wrestling at one point, and then got back into it in 94 in the Bret Hart era, which really was a great era. And I watched a whole bunch of tapes, got the PWI Almanac, and I'm really familiar with it. I love it. My friends at the school know I love it. People in politics around Tallahassee know I'm a quintessential wrestling fan. I'm not ashamed. And it's a fun little thing to be a fan of, although as of late, they're really shaming all of us wrestling fans even more, aren't they, Tim?
Oh, they really are, yeah. Sad, kind of, actually. So you had the opportunity to watch Survivor Series, right?
Yes.
You did. Well, that's kind of like the theme of the show. I'm going to talk a little bit about it. I'm going to first talk a little bit about what the whole event was, and then I'll kind of move on and talk about, like, match by match, see how everything went. Is that cool?
Sound good? Yeah.
All right, awesome. Well, what did you think overall about the show? How'd you think it came off?
It came off as a decent show because the crowd was really hot for it. The crowd was really excited and into it. It was it in Philadelphia this year?
Yeah, it was in Philadelphia, yeah.
So Philadelphia crowds are known for being just ecstatic. I remember watching the 1995 King of the Ring, where Savio Vega is in the finals against Mabel, now known as Vista, and just the fans start chanting, ECW, 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 and the fans are chanting this loud. If any of you ever see the DVD of the Rise and Fall of ECW, you'll see that clip on there. But they kept doing that throughout the night, if I remember right. They are really vocal fans in Philly. They have a great little feud with the New York fans. So if you ever want to get a Philly crowd really riled up, you tell them about New York, and they'll start chanting, New York sucks! New York sucks! It's so amazing. I never got to be in a Philly crowd. I never got to be in a New York crowd, but just they have so much energy. So I think the crowd helped make the show tonight.
Oh, definitely. No, I agree. I mean, the crowd, I think, actually saved the event, especially, I mean, it was worth the $40 just to see how over CM Punk was with Triple H standing in the ring right next to him. Like, that was priceless. You know, because all the political stuff there.
Just to see the CZW and ROH shirts at ringside were priceless also. Seeing those fans just chant for CM Punk. And now it brings an interesting question. What do they do with CM Punk? Do they push him as basically the number two star of the ECW brand while it's still around? Or do they just, you know, bury him?
Bury him. Well, you know, remember this guy named Randy Orton back in 2004 was buried by Triple H because he got a little too over. So, I don't know. Hopefully we won't see that again, but, you know, this is WWE, so. But just to say a little bit what I thought about the show, I thought, like, I was marking out like crazy every day that they announced for matches. Like, the fact that they had three traditional Survivor Series matches on there made me go nuts because we haven't really seen a Survivor Series like that in a few years. Not to mention also, like, Undertaker's gonna be in a First Blood match, and, other matches on there. Like, I thought it was gonna be really good, and actually, I was a bit let down. And I think mostly because I think most of the traditional Survivor Series matches didn't really have much drama to them. Like, all the faces won, and then most of them were just kind of, were kind of booked a little too, making the faces look a little too invincible, I think. Would you kind of agree with that, or?
Well, the old Survivor Series, the idea was that generally the undercard teams would go over if they were heels or faces, it really didn't matter, and then the babyface teams would go over. In the 1990 Survivor Series, all the faces who survived were on one team, and it was Hogan and Warrior and Santana versus Rick Martel and his team, which, by the way, was the first Survivor Series shutout when Rick Martel's all survived in 1990 against Jake Roberts' team. And on Rick Martel's team was Ted DiBiase, who was the sole survivor on the $1 million team match with The Undertaker and DiBiase versus Dusty and Bret, that team. And it was just really, really interesting to see how they would hype the teams up and really make them believe that, hey, these guys like each other, they're a part of the team. And it was good seeing the tradition brought back. They really had them coming out with each other and being on the same team. That's a great little thing that makes Survivor Series special. This is always one of my favorite pay-per-views as a fan growing up,
yeah.
The Survivor Series.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Rob. I mean, I didn't really look at it that way because I've looked at it mostly how it's been booked over the past few years where you have, like, you know, one guy facing, like, three heels and, like, you know, like what happened with Randy Orton the last few years. But yeah, that's pretty good, though. I mean, I like your points there. So I guess we'll start here by talking about the first match, the pay-per-view, which was Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, Sergeant Slaughter, and Ron Simmons defeating Kenny, Johnny, Nicky, and Mikey, of course, the Spirit Squad, excuse me. What'd you think of that match?
They got a little confused in that match in that it was supposed to only be four members of the Spirit Squad wrestling, but they actually, it seemed, had all five of them get in the ring. Am I wrong with that?
No, they did. And then they had one, I think one of them, I don't remember which one it was, the one who wasn't in it was kicked out, like, with Arn Anderson. And I don't know if that ever, like, actually worked out, but they tried. So, but it was cool, like, seeing Ric Flair kind of come back and pin, like, I think three of them.
He pinned three of them.
Yeah, he got rid of three of them. Or I guess one made him, few of them submit. So that's pretty cool seeing that.
Well, Ron Simmons, I'm really proud to be an FSU student, Ron Simmons around. He is such a legend from FSU. I don't think people understand how much he meant to Florida State University, how people in this town still tell stories about Big Bad Ron. Mm-hmm. And just seeing him in Philadelphia, which has a really good sized African American population and seeing how over Ron Simmons was with that crowd. Mm-hmm. That's another thing too, we don't talk about a lot as wrestling fans, is just the huge proportions of African Americans which come to professional wrestling. It is not proportional to the general population. When you go to a wrestling show in the South or in some cities up north where there are, you know, urban areas, you will find a lot of black people there, and it just makes the show really interesting to see just this wide crossbred of people there, and just seeing Ron Simmons cheered like crazy. They were chanting for one of the Spirit Squad members to tap when Slaughter had him in the Cobra Clutch,
mm-hmm.
which is not as devastating as the Noogie of Doom if you remember the old WrestleFest game, but. That was his finisher for a few weeks back in the 90s, in 91, which he just put him in a noogie. And they decided, well, for the WrestleFest video game, we'll take that instead of the Cobra Clutch or the Camel Clutch.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Arn Anderson did a good part, too. You know, people were giving the four fingers. They remember Arn Anderson. They remember the Horseman.
Yes, I was very happy to see that. That's he remembered that.
Fantastic. He didn't work that well because he's 60 years old and he's heavy, but Dusty just is a great showman, and Flair's the best.
Oh, yeah,
Flair,
he is.
Whose ex-wife is a Gator alumni, my old school UF where I did my undergrad. So you'd always see Ric Flair around at Gator Growl, which is a big pep rally, or at the Swamp, and I guess that's his ex-wife, so he's not coming back there anytime soon.
That's true. Just to kind of update everyone who's listening about, James and I are speaking from Tallahassee, Florida, which is the home of Florida State University, and that's actually one of the reasons we brought Ron Simmons. Went to Florida State, was a big name up here. He was actually appeared at the house show here back in January, was it, or February, or one of those months.
It was in February.
Yeah, February. And then he beat up Coach, threw him out of the ring, and he had the Spirit Squad doing the Gator Bite, which is basically the rival school. Or Gator, is it Gator Chomp or Gator Bite? I never understood.
It's Gator Chomp.
Oh, Gator Chomp. Okay. All right. Well, either way, it sucks. I hate it. But
I do too. I went there for 4 years. I don't like them either. But with that said,
I mean, it's annoying. Like, you know, I mean, people think the FSU chop's dumb, but like the UF one, like if you're holding a drink, you're kind of screwed because you can't really do it that right, you know?
That's so, right. You really can't.
So. All right. Sorry to get off track there, but All right, so yeah.
No. There are a lot of wrestling fans who are also fans of college sports.
That's
true. Look at Road Warrior Animals. Road Warrior Animals at Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Football star.
That's true. So, all right. So you know, after that match, we had the Chris Benoit Chavo Guerrero match. Now, James, I just want your opinion. I've done the match, but what do you think of the way they've been booking Chavo Guerrero and more precisely Vicky Guerrero? Here, I mean, what are your thoughts? Like, do you agree with what they've been doing? Do you think that making Vicky a heel was a good idea, or what's your kind of thoughts on the whole situation?
I am happy to see Vicky Guerrero get a payday from the World Wrestling Entertainment Company for her family's sake. You know, she's got these two little girls and then the third little girl to support, I'm happy she's getting a payday. I wish she wouldn't be on TV. I think they're using her. I think she's being used to make the point that, hey, you know, the Guerrero family is cool with how we are handling his death. To this day, they're still talking about it and making it a central part of the SmackDown storylines, and I don't like that. With that said, Vicky Guerrero is quite a performer. She really is good. I really enjoy watching her get out there. She has great facial expressions, and she just looks like a regular woman performing, and I enjoy it.
No, I mean, it is, and you bring up a good point that a lot of people overlook, especially people that are critics of the angle, is that, you know, she is, I mean, as bad as this, you know, may seem on moral reasons and all that, but it is good that she's getting, you know, she's receiving, you know, money benefits from, you know, from the company, because obviously she needs it, and, you know.
But
so,
there are other ways to have gotten her money
also. No
doubt. On TV, too, in defense of, you know, the critics.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree, and there's other ways they could have done it, but of course it's WWE, and only that company can make the widow of Eddie Guerrero a heel, so, but,
Just like WCW made Bret Hart a heel after his brother died.
Oh, yeah, that was priceless. And then they had him play the role of Shawn Michaels against Goldberg. That was even better.
Okay, that's where Brett got kicked by Goldberg.
Yeah, yeah, that's where his career ended almost, pretty much, right there.
That's where his career ended.
Yeah,
that's concussion
where
right there triggered the series of other concussions, which later that month, when he was fighting Terry Funk, he felt losing. He went to the doctor, and they said, "You're never wrestling again." It's like, no, you shouldn't wrestle again. It's like, you're never wrestling again, and he knows it. And that's why you will never see Bret Hart wrestle again in the United States or in Canada or any other country in the world.
That really is a shame. But anyway, getting back to pay-per-view, we talked about the angle involving Benoit and Guerrero, but what did you think of the actual match?
The match was good. I was sort of drifting away from the match, even though it was probably the best match of the night.
Yeah, actually, yeah, and all things considered, it probably was. I mean, from a technical standpoint and a psychology standpoint, I actually was expecting a little more from the two of them, but I still think for what it was worth, it was good. And I'm glad Benoit won. I don't think Chavo should be U.S. champion.
They were limited on time. I think the plan is to make Chavo U.S. champion, though, somewhere down the line. They keep bringing up the estate. Even though if you know anything about the law, you realize that she's the executor of the estate. She's the wife. Why would she be messing with the estate? She's the wife, It's just one of those funny little legal things that people who aren't lawyers or law students wouldn't think about, but people like me who are studying stuff and just got done studying it right now, a few minutes ago,
yeah,
we think about that stuff all the time. It's like, why are they doing this? And plus, that estate would have been probated a while ago, probably.
Yeah, I mean, that's funny. I mean, it's just funny how WWE considers their audience to be so dumb that they wouldn't think about that. Because I was actually thinking about that, too. I'm thinking, she's the executor of the state. What does she mess with? She has all the money, if that's what they're going after. Like, yeah, it just seemed really weird. But, yeah, but that's kind of funny how WWE does it.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see where the storyline goes. Mm-hmm. They're planning on it going somewhere. With that said, I've always been a Chavo Guerrero Jr. fan. I thought Chavo should have been one of the people getting a Rey Mysterio-like push. In fact, my idea was to bring Chavo over to one of the brands and have him win one of the belts against whomever the champ was on Raw, and have Mysterio win the SmackDown belt, and have the two in the ring with the two belts celebrating, and then maybe Benoit with the U.S. belt can come in and they can recreate that moment. There's proper ways to book wrestling and to draw money, and that's the key to pro wrestling, is draw money, and they don't seem to be doing that with this Guerrero-Benoit storyline.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, definitely. We'll see what happens. So then after the Benoit-Chavo match, we move on to the Women's Championship match, which involved Mickie James and what would be Lita's final match, where she dropped the title to Mickie afterwards. Now, the match, to me, was nothing. Like, it wasn't anything that special. I mean, Lita never really was that special of a wrestler. I think she's a bit overrated. But the thing that annoyed me was the crying time skit at the end. I mean, it was funny for, like, maybe 2 minutes. But then it went on for, like, 15, and it was just, okay, does Lita want to be remembered for being this whiny, bitch in the ring? Like, I just didn't... What did you think of all that, like, with the match?
Well,
and that
they did that skit to bury her because she's leaving.
Yeah.
And she later went on to her MySpace page and complained about it as much as she could complain about it. She was very disappointed. They were confiscating Thank You Lita signs all over the arena. In fact, if you remember looking at the front row, there are Thank You Lita signs, and literally you see the security guards coming there and grabbing the signs away from the fans.
I thought I saw that, and I didn't, like, I kind of blinked, and I'm like, did I really just see that? I think I did see that. You're right.
Yeah. And this was a Philadelphia crowd, too, and when they were doing the She's a Crack Whore chant, and she has
yeah, that's classic
chant, which are vulgar chants, but that's a Philadelphia crowd, and they were doing that more as kind of a remembrance of her, and kind of like their own little tribute to her, making them realize that, hey, she's one of us. She was Miss Congeniality in ECW. She was the one who was spanking Tammy Sitch with the paddles, Don Marie Elder, and the great moments in ECW, if any of the fans remember that. It's a great moment because they replayed it constantly on their intros and, ad nauseam. But still, she was a product of Philadelphia, even though she's from South Florida.
Uh-huh.
And she and the fans remembered that. I was not crazy about the skit and how it went on. If they had just done something really quick, even with the adult themes of the skit, it could have been okay, but they dragged that skit on.
That's what bugged me. It was good for like 2 minutes, and after that I was like, okay, let's move on to pay-per-view here, because I didn't pay to see this.
And that's the thing, too, is when they're pulling out her sex toy or whatever, and it's like they're little kids watching this.
Yeah.
And they really seem to forget that.
No, they really do. And No, it's a shame. It really was a blown out of proportion segment. It was just dumb. And
Lita was never a good worker, but she would have some really great spots in a match. She would do moonsaults and hook and Rana's, and she was fantastic in doing those high spots. She never did work as well as she could as Trish Stratus or Molly Holly could. It seems that Finley get to train her, or was she out with a neck injury when Finley was training the team?
I think she's out neck injury, but I'm almost certain that she worked with him a little bit, but not nearly as much as the other divas did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean it's, but I just actually talking about Lita. This is kind of off topic of the show. It doesn't matter at this point. there's rumors.
I'm gonna kill that for you, Tim. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. There's rumors that Lita or Amy Dumas wants to go to TNA, and I don't know the validity of that because I remember reading a few months back, she wants to get into acting, which I hope that doesn't happen because we've seen how she acts. But do you think there's any validity in those claims of her going to TNA at all? Or
I am hearing more and more from my friends who were close to people inside the business. So this is secondhand hearsay. This is not me talking to wrestlers. This is me talking to people who are friends with wrestlers. There are more and more people interested in going to TNA since Kurt Angle went there. People who you never thought would be interested, and the rumors around the dirt sheets, as they like to call them, the sheets like the Wrestling Observer, the Torch, and the Figure Four Weekly, was that, that Benoit was interested, but Benoit's in a contract with WWE, so he's not getting out of that. But when you watch the Survivor Series, to tie it all back in the Survivor Series, you look at all the teams who competed at Survivor Series and all the people and think, hey, would this guy be doing better in TNA than he would be in WWE? I don't know what Vince Russo booking, if that would be true, but that's a consideration. I wanted to tie that back into Survivor Series because we say we're getting off topic, but all these considerations actually affect the show as to how it's pulled off.
No, that's okay. I mean, yeah, and at this point anyway, I think it's okay if we get off topic since we're so far gone anyway. But But no, that's a really good point, though. I mean, I was, looking at that, too. I mean, there's other guys. Who I thought would do really good in TNA, and this isn't going to happen, but I think Edge would be phenomenal in TNA. I mean, most of his best matches in WWE, I think, have been gimmick matches. Like that no DQ match he had with Eddie Guerrero. Of course, the TLC matches, the cage matches he's had. Like, I think if he were in TNA, I think he'd really pull off some good stuff there, especially with Christian being there. So, I don't know. It's just, but yeah, I see your point, though, and it's a pretty cool concept. But anyway, that moves us actually on to the next match involving Edge, which was, of course, the traditional Survivor Series match, which was DX, CM Punk, the Hardy Boys. And they defeated Edge and Orton, Rated RKO, Nitro, Helms, and Mike Knox. Now, I thought the funniest part of this match was the beginning when Shawn Michaels super kicked Mike Knox. And then the rest of the team had to convince him that Mike Knox was actually in the match. He's like, Shawn was like, who was that guy? And Triple H's like, he was in the match. He's like, really? He's in the match? It was just really funny. Did you catch any of that? Or?
Of course.
Yeah, it was great.
That right there, that's DX just bittering everybody. And it's for the business that they're doing this, but at the same time, DX are stars and Mike Knox is not. In fact, I can't cry for Mike Knox. He has performed poorly. If you've watched any of his Deep South matches, the guy just does not have it.
Yeah.
And people are critical of his fans. We can't criticize the wrestlers. Well, we know what we like and we know what we don't like. Mike Knox just has not been able to deliver a big guy like him could deliver.
Oh, I agree. But don't you think he also looked kind of like a less roided up Snitsky?
That's the interesting thing, to see how the wellness policy has affected the bodies of all these wrestlers. Just to see if it's even being enforced now. That's the other interesting.
Just look at Chris Masters.
Yeah, look at Chris Masters.
Yeah. I mean,
what can you say?
Yeah. I mean, definitely. I mean, the match was good. The whole shutout thing, I think, worked really well in this match. I don't think the other team was really hurt that badly in doing it, except Mike Knox, but he doesn't count anyway. It was just really cool, and as we said earlier, it was just awesome to see how over CM Punk was. And, Triple H looked, I don't think he was expecting that, I don't think they planned to have him CM Punk say, "Are you ready?" I think that was, an on-the-fly move, because I don't think they were expecting that at all.
Well, Triple H is a smart man. As much as Triple H,
he's
a really smart guy, and he knows how to read a crowd and ad lib and whatever he has to. And this was an instance of that.
Yeah.
He read the crowd. The crowd was way hot for CM Punk. The crowd was hot for the Hardys, too. They were into DX. I would have tried to keep Randy Orton's streak alive. I would have had him go over somehow, you know, figure out a way just to do it, but want to do it that way. They wanted to shut out. It didn't help. I don't know if it hurt, as a lot of people said, but honestly, it didn't help any of those five by the way they jobbed them out. But then again, that's WWE, so what can you do?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, they did job all them out, but I mean, Edge and Orton are pretty high up. High enough in the car where they aren't that hurt by it. And, you know, Nitro, Helms, and Mike Knox, they're all mid-carders, low mid-carders, so, I mean, yeah, I don't really agree with them, of DX and everyone just crushing them, but, I mean, at the same time, it isn't that bad.
It's symptomatic of a further pattern of just DX not wanting to put anybody over, and sooner or later, they're going to need to put over new stars. It's Hunter's company, it's Shane's company, it's Larissa's company, and it's Stephanie's company sooner or later, and they can't just, for their, you know, their own sakes, just keep Hunter on top. It's a thing where they have to say, who could Hunter lose to build up so this guy can be the future draw? Orton or Edge could be one of those guys who could just be pushed to superstar, and Edge proved he can run with the ball. Orton has not proved that yet, but Edge proved he could with his feud with Cena this year, and I don't think it's smart to beat him all the time. I don't think this one loss hurts him, but they better figure out a way to really use him, or else he may just go to TNA. You know, he may get sick and tired of it, but hey, I'm not Edge. I don't know what he's thinking. He may just like the money a lot and not want to deal with anything else.
Yeah, no, I agree. And actually, and on that subject of DX not putting in over, what'd you think of the skit they did on Monday this past Raw where DX put the Spirit Squad in the box and says send to OVW? What'd you think of that? I thought that was really funny.
That was funny. It was a little bit too inside, though.
I thought that, too.
If people knew what OVW was, that would have been great. I left. I thought it was so funny. And then it said they don't have to get there until Christmas.
That was pretty funny. I mean, I think it was a little too inside, too. And we know that's what's going to happen, too. I mean, I don't foresee any of those guys having any singles pushes anytime soon on Raw. So, I mean...
And Johnny Jeter was really good, though.
Yeah.
Johnny Jeter. And who was the other one who was really good?
Ken Doan. Yeah.
Is that the one who's going out with Mickey?
Yeah, he's actually engaged to her, I think.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, I think they're engaged, so lucky him.
Well, Mickey's a good performer. I like her facial expressions from that previous match where she wrestled Lita.
Yeah.
She's a good performer.
Oh, she really is, and I actually liked her better as a heel, but she's doing well as a face right now, so. But anyway, just to move on a little bit now. So we had that match. Next, we had Mr. Kennedy defeating The Undertaker in the first blood match. Now, of course, Undertaker never loses cleanly, but I mean, I thought the match was actually kind of boring. I mean, I expected that considering the two people in it, but I think I was expecting a little bit more though, a little more drama. What did you think of the match?
I was not happy with how they booked the match. Mm-hmm. The point of a first blood match is for a heel to be able to go over without beating the babyface.
Mm-hmm.
That is the point of the first blood match. Kennedy wins. However, he wins because of the interference backfiring on MVP, and maybe of MVP backfiring on The Undertaker. Maybe you should explain that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, what happened to MVP, I forgot. He came in and he hit Undertaker by accident, right?
Yeah, because he was trying to screw over Mr. Even though he's a heel.
Right. Yeah, I don't understand that at all. I mean, I guess... It kind of made sense that MVP would be pissed at Kennedy because he walked out on him a few times, but still, I mean, I don't think it should have been involved in a match like that because it just leaves people confused and kind of, I don't know. But
yeah, the match was. It should be a better match, in all honesty. I like Mr. Kennedy at times. I like his charisma. I think he can do some really cool moves, but he has just not been able to deliver it.
Yeah,
and
he's just bland.
Undertaker has been subpar.
Yeah, and you know what annoys me about Mr. Kennedy is I think a lot of the IWC really overrates him big time. Like, you know, just because they gave him an announcing gimmick and he can say his name, that doesn't mean he's over. And, like, I think he's actually kind of bland, like, you know, and even watching some of his OVW stuff, like, he hasn't improved much since then. I mean, you know, maybe his injury kind of that he had a few months back might have hurt him a little bit, but still, I mean, he's got a long way to go. I think people stop overrating him. But, I mean, you know, a feud with The Undertaker will definitely help him, but he's far away from really delivering at a bigger level. And
so in another off-topic, is Undertaker going to be pushed against Batista next year for Mania?
I've been hearing that rumor, and I could see it happening, but I don't know if I can see Taker ever losing a streak. I mean, it would make sense to lose it. If he's going to lose it to anyone, Batista would be a good choice.
The rumor is that Vince McMahon's high on him losing the streak this year.
Really? Mm-hmm. I see, maybe I'm biased because I'm a Taker mark, but I mean, honestly, like, I think that he's going to be the only person. I can't see anyone else ever having a streak of, like, what's it, like, 14 now? 14 or...
Yeah.
Like, that's never going to happen again. Like, no one's ever going to have a character that's going to last that long and be that over for that long and able to get wins like that. And I think that's just something Undertaker should have. I mean, it still wouldn't be that bad to be 14-1, but I think, I mean, it'd be really special if he was able to go out with the streak and then maybe put Batista over at another pay-per-view, like maybe a second one.
That's what you can do, and that's good business thinking, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's always Vince McMahon's call, and that's what you have to remember if you watch Survivor Series or any other pay-per-view. Those matches, it is always Vince McMahon's call.
Yeah, no, that's
he
true.
Is the boss, and it's his choice.
That's true. So, all right, well, we had that match, and then looks like we're moving on now to the second, I guess the co-main event, you could call it, which was John Cena, Kane, Lashley, and Sabu, and RVD. There's a lot of guys in that match. Versus Big Show, Test, MVP, Finlay, and Umaga. This is probably... I don't know. I think of the three, this one didn't really connect with me that much. What did you think of it?
I enjoyed watching Finlay wrestle. He is an amazing wrestler.
That's true. I liked watching Finlay wrestle, too.
And it was just so funny seeing Rob Van Dam kick him so hard. And you're just wondering, because if you're following this in real life, he just really... just hit him hard with that. You think Finley's going to get him back a little bit, but Finley didn't get the chance. Van Dam was eliminated. It was interesting seeing Test eliminate Van Dam. I think it kind of tells you where the ECW brand is going. The story of that match is where ECW is going, in all honesty, and that's not anywhere.
Oh, exactly. I mean...
Yeah.
And this is off topic, but I'm just curious, who do you think's going to win the Elimination Chamber on Sunday?
Lashley.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually going to go with Lashley, too.
Say what you're going to say.
Yeah, I was going to go with Lashley, too, but only... I mean, at first I thought they'd go to RVD, but then apparently Vince is really against him for the marijuana thing. And
Well, when you have your sitting WWE champion arrested along with another talent,
yeah,
arrested for drug possession,
and
when you're yourself trying to put out the perception your guys aren't on drugs of any kind, it's hard, and I don't blame him.
I don't blame him either, but, you know, we also got to look at it. I mean, Vince was never quick to put the belt on him in the first place. I mean, in 2002, when RVD had the feud against Triple H, I really think that would have been a great time for Triple H to put someone over. And RVD would have been a really good, like, you know, that was a good, he was really hot then. Like, he had a lot of support going in, and then Triple H, of course, won in the end. And I think that would have been a really good time for him, but of course it didn't happen. And it seemed like it only happened this time around because he got injured, and because he was out for the first ECW period. He was almost like they, like, wanted to make it up to him. And I don't know if he really had.
Paul was really pushing for him, and Paul has since lost a lot of power.
Yeah, oh, exactly, yeah. So...
And the thing about the match, too, is they really protected Umaga.
They did, yeah. That's true.
That's classic Survivor Series. Like Zeus in 1988, if you remember, where Zeus was on the $1 million team against Hogan and his Hulkamaniacs. First thing they do is they disqualify Zeus from the match because they wanted to keep Zeus hot for the big cage match between Hogan and Beefcake versus Savage and Zeus at the No Holds Barred show they did.
Hey, this
and the whole idea was protect Zeus, get him disqualified early, so they're going back into the past to do some of their stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I mean, it's amazing, though. I mean, for as much flack as WWE seems to get, like, when they want to, they can really protect the wrestler they want to push. Like, the way they booked Umaga, I think, has been really good. They haven't really done one decision I think has been bad in terms of booking Umaga. I think it might be a little too soon for him to get a title shot, but other than that, like, they've done a really good job, and it's amazing what they can do if they actually put their mind to getting someone over, I think. And would you agree with that at all, or?
Absolutely. Yeah. Look at what Cena and Umaga did the following night on Raw.
Yeah.
They didn't touch each other. They just stared each other down. Two guys who've been well protected this year.
Mm-hmm.
Cena only had a few losses and was champion against Umaga, who's undefeated. And Umaga didn't back down. It was his handler, Estrada, pulling him away.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, they're doing good with it, I think, which is good.
But then they give us some of the other skits too that night. So what can you do?
Yeah, that's true.
So what do you think of the rest of the match, though? You really were interested in it?
There was something about it I just didn't click. I don't know if it was. I'm not really into the ECW stuff. I mean, the new ECW stuff, I should say. And it was a very ECW heavy match, and I think that's one of the reasons I didn't really like it that much. Plus, they reused the finish from Survivor Series 2003 with Cena being the survivor against Big Show, which annoyed me. We've already seen him pin Big Show multiple times. No need to do it again. Like, it just, I don't know. It's just, man, I just didn't really click with
me. Big Show's done, basically, is what they're saying, right?
Yeah, apparently he's in chronic back pain and he wants to be finished.
Do you think he'll come back for Hogan at Mania, or do you think he's just in so much pain he can't do it?
You know, I think he's always been a company man, to an extent. I think he would do it, especially because they're friends. Yeah, I mean they're good friends in real life, quote unquote. So I mean, you know, it's possible. It's a possibility. But anyway, now after that, we finally come to the main event, which was one of the most lackluster main events I've seen in a long time, which was Batista versus King Booker, and of course Batista won. I couldn't get into it, maybe just because of the two people in it. I like Booker T, but I don't know. I really don't like Batista that much at all.
Booker T is very hit or miss depending on his opponent, and Booker T is a really good wrestler. I can remember watching some of the old matches from him from tapes of Global Wrestling Federation where him and his brother were wrestling, and then later on they were the Harlem Heat, Keith and Cole, and then it was Booker T and Stevie Ray, and I remember Booker T just always having some great matches with opponents. He had some great matches with Chris Benoit. Him and Sting had a great match against Legion of Doom, the Road Warriors, back in 96, back at WCW Uncensored. And to think of just how much Booker T has accomplished, when you think about it, he's the first black WWE champion. Mm-hmm. You know, Rock is not considered to be African-American, even though his father, Rocky Johnson, is African-American.
Right.
So Booker T has accomplished a lot, but his wrestling could be really hit or miss, and when you put him in there with someone like Batista, who is commended for his age. And they lied about his age. He's older than they say that he is.
He's 40,
is
isn't he?
He's really talented.
Batista, yeah, I guess for his age he is, but still I think he's... I think he's still kind of lacking.
Well, he's lost his confidence.
Yeah, he really
has. He's also afraid of doing moves because he was hurt. He tore his... What would he tear? His
triceps.
Three times, right?
Yeah, it was one of... Yeah, I know. I don't know if that... Maybe it was something in his back. I don't remember which one it was.
Well, the thing about Batista too is they really need to keep him with Finley for a few more months because Finley can get his confidence up. Finley knows how to teach Batista, okay, this is when you be a big guy, and this is when I sell for you, and this is the point where you have to sell for me a little bit, but you sell in a different way because you're a big man. And they need to get his confidence up that he is a monster and that he can perform. And only guys like Regal and Batista and Finley can do that. And that's the importance of why you put a Finley in there with a Lashley or a Batista. But the match was not good. It lost my attention. I can remember chants of people saying, cancel SmackDown. Cancel SmackDown. Chanting that. So when they're saying that, you know there's problems. And this is a Philadelphia crowd, so I don't think I misheard that. I think that's what they were chanting.
No, I heard that chant too, and I don't know. It was interesting, and I also think another guy Batista should be working with is Benoit, maybe even a heel Benoit would be awesome. I mean, I just don't know where they're going with it, though. I mean, I don't really see. I mean, Batista's champion, that's good for him. I just don't see where they're going with it at this point.
He has not been on fire since he came back, and he really had a chance to be on fire. I think it's the loss of confidence. I liked the booking from WWE that they put the SmackDown match on last.
Mm-hmm.
They gave the championship match for SmackDown time. I'm crazy about the announcing from JBL. wrong. I love Dave Viola. He can pull out a million different references, but I don't know if he's helping the talent like he should be.
Yeah. No, he does. I mean, he does a number of burial jobs. I mean, look what he said about Vito and The Miz and MVP, and it's just a lot of like younger talent or is people he seems to go after.
And then he basically allows his own feuds with them. He's upset when they're playing video games or whatever to steep into his commentary.
Yeah.
And sooner or later, he's going to catch on more and more. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with Jesse Ventura years ago. Jesse Ventura was really good at putting himself over as an announcer and not the talent. But then he started to get it and really could put other people over. And you start to see that with, you know, him talking better about MVP and uh-huh. other people. I guess what they say, reported MVP took him out for a beer or something. Yes, I guess that helps. I don't know. I don't know what these guys do on the road. I remember some friend of mine told me he saw Kane eating a flaming up here, you know, after the house show. So they're people.
Yeah, no, they are. It's just, you know, like a friend of mine works at the Stir Fry place on Monroe. And she saw Lita was in there during the house show. I mean, so yeah, I mean, they are normal people. It's just sometimes weird kind of to, you know, to think of them that way. But, well, anyway, everyone, that is the Survivor Series review. I'm actually going to keep James around for a few more minutes to talk a few more things, because obviously you guys can tell he knows a lot about what he's talking about, and he's a good host to have on here. So I just wanted to ask you, what is your opinion on you know, we watched it together, Kurt Angle versus Samoa Joe. Like, how do you think the match was, and how do you think they're doing with the booking of the rematch?
I'm not happy with the booking of the rematch. They should have delayed that rematch until March. I liked the match for 13 minutes. It was a decent, really good match, actually, for 13 minutes. Kurt Angle apparently called the audible to go home early, to stop the match early. We don't know why. But he wanted the match done early. So that TNA pay-per-view, the people were planning for a long match. But Angle called the audible. I don't think that they should have agreed to the rematch right away. I think by Angle not shaking his hand and then shaking his hand the next show, that cheapened everything. What they should have done was just have Angle still be a baby face, but do his own thing and just have Joe chase him.
Mm-hmm.
Chase him in a smart way, where I'm going to go through all these guys, I'm going to get to you, I'll win the TNA title, so that'll give you reason to fight me again.
No, I totally agree. I said I liked it when we were watching it, but looking back on it, I feel ripped off. And the reason is like, I think it really should have been on the level of, like, an Angle Michaels, which was at WrestleMania 21. Like, I thought that match was phenomenal. And
well, that match had a little more time to it.
Exactly. Well, I think I honestly don't think there was any reason for this to only be 13 minutes. I mean, you know, just looking at the way they built it up, they built it up as a dream match of the decade. They basically pretty much had no other matches on the pay-per-view that anyone were interested in. Like, I didn't care about any of the matches, even the Sting match.
You didn't care about that great Sting versus Abyss classic.
I don't even want to talk about that. I'll get sick. But I felt kind of ripped off, and I know the idea of the match was to book for a rematch, but what's going to happen is people that actually ordered the pay-per-view, which I got a feeling a lot of people did, people I've talked to that usually don't order them said they did. But what's bad, though, is that people are going to think they're ripped off now, and they're not going to want to buy another TNA pay-per-view for a long time now. And so they're actually, I got a feeling when the numbers come out, next month's pay-per-view, Turning Point, their numbers going to go way down from Genesis. Because people don't want to risk getting ripped off again. That's just my opinion.
And the thing about TNA, though, is that the Kurt Angle thing has helped a little bit with the ratings. It's not the huge ratings jump that brings them to a 2.0, but it brought them. The first show was a 1.0, and the Thanksgiving drew a 0.9 share.
Yeah, it did.
A 0.9 share on Thanksgiving. That is unbelievable.
No, that is pretty good. I mean, of course, everyone else was saying, well, SmackDown was able to, you know, get higher ratings, but of course, SmackDown was more well-known when it was on Thursdays.
Well, SmackDown is more well-known, but you gotta remember, that is a notorious night for low ratings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take the existing base and you slice it, SmackDown already had a bigger base going into Thanksgiving than TNA did. So TNA is doing
a little bit
something right. They're having good wrestling, but that's not much. They don't have the complete package. I think Russo really, really needs to go. He needs to bring Cornette in as the booker.
Yeah. And, I mean, anyone that's listened to this podcast knows how much I hate Russo. I've ranted about him countless times. I don't even want to get into it now. I'll sick of myself again. Well, I mean, I think that's really all there's talk about. James, I want to thank you very much for being on the show. I mean, this was a very entertaining show. I haven't had a lot of fun doing this in a long time, so it was really good having you on this.
Hey, two is better than one when you're doing these shows.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I enjoy doing it by myself, but it's always nice to mix up a little bit and get someone else on there, especially someone as knowledgeable as you are about wrestling, and you bring
a
lot to the show.
We have to do a Survivor Series show at some point next year about the 97 Survivor Series, because next year...
10 years.
Back in Montreal.
And, yeah, 10 years, and back in Montreal. I can't believe they're doing that. Actually, I can believe that. But, anyway, well, thanks again, James, and everyone else out there. This has been From the Eye of Dragon. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Bye.